It's a great privilege to be here, to be following a great leader, thinker, advisor. We've all benefited from his wisdom. So it's a great privilege for me to follow him. But I must say it is an even greater privilege to have such a wonderfully large and interested and enthusiastic audience. And I thank you all for being here. The good news, in addition, is that this is happening all over the United States. There are churches, there are trade unions, there are student groups, there are peace groups all over this country, holding rallies, meetings, teach-ins, and on Sundays, particularly like today, Pittsburgh, Plattsburgh, I've just come from, across the ferry, people are holding candlelight vigils. And they are saying, no to war. We want a world of peace and justice. We are opposed to this bombing. It is not being done in our name. And the movement is growing all the time in other countries as well. I was in Durban recently for a world conference on racism. I'm going to say just a couple of things about that which relate to subsequent events, including the terrorist action in New York. And then take it from there for just a minute or two to look at the larger picture. For those of you who followed events in Durban, I'll do a quick recap of what for me was most important. You may remember that prior to the Durban World Conference, with about 120 countries represented there, heads of state, ambassadors, diplomats, ministers. Before that meeting, 6 months earlier, there'd been a meeting in Geneva to write the agenda for Durban. And two things came up in Geneva. The United States said, if the issue of slavery or the issue of reparations is on the agenda, we will not permit it. And Israel followed by saying, if the question of the Palestinians, their right to a homeland, came up, they would oppose its inclusion on the agenda. So we knew this was going to happen in Durban. The debate began immediately after Geneva. And I expect you all know the outcome. Over 100 countries said, we cannot allow two countries to dictate to the rest of the world what should be on the agenda, what should be discussed. And so the mass of the countries resolved to go ahead and discuss these issues in spite of opposition from the United States and Israel. And as you know, both the United States and Israel walked out of the conference at some point. The only point I want to make there, which seems to me particularly important in the light of global developments as a whole, was that what was demonstrated in Durban at a world conference was that the notion that any one or two countries could dictate to the rest of the world, that notion is no longer acceptable, is no longer applicable, and it will not be permitted in the future. But to understand Durban, we do have to go a lot further back. Matter of fact, we have to go back about 2.5 years or so. Because what happened in Durban was simply a consequence of a sequence of events that began in Seattle. And I'm glad to say that many students were in Seattle in November of 1999 when we said to the World Trade Organization, "You think you're coming here to write an agenda for the whole world? Well, you're wrong. We're going to shut you down. And what is more, we shut them down. We shut them down. There was no WOTO millennial round in Seattle. They came there, the corporations and the politicians, and they said, we can write an agenda for the whole world, a corporate global agenda for the millennium. We sent them home. There was no corporate global agenda from Seattle. And Seattle, as you know, was followed by Davos, was followed by Washington, was followed by Prague, was followed by Quebec City, where many people from this area were involved. And after that came Genoa, where the police were issued with live ammunition, so we knew what we were up to. And then after Genoa came Durban. And the message is the same, that across the world, people are saying, we do not accept this corporate global agenda that you are writing for us. We demand a people's agenda, an agenda coming from the grassroots, which puts people before profits. And that is going to be the movement of the future. And so it is in that context that I ask you to understand what happened in New York on September 11, and also what is happening across this country and across the world, where people are saying no to war and yes to a new kind of world with new values, and particularly values which put people before profits. So let's look at that for a moment, because it seems to me we truly are in a situation of crisis. Suddenly the forces both for repression, for militarism, have increased 100-fold on the one hand, even as at the same time all over the world the forces for peace and justice are increasing all over the world. And so we're into this crisis situation of a massive confrontation of powers for war and powers for peace. And earlier this morning I was in a panel with Howard Zinn, where he talked about the possibility that maybe, just maybe, what we are seeing in our time is the end of this notion of any superpower in the world which is trying to dominate the entire world. Maybe we've reached a point now where we are being challenged in that way. Of course, the problem has been enormously confronted since the September 11th. Confronted in a truly terrifying way, it's become now much more complex what we have to confront. Because if in Seattle in 1999 we confronted and challenged a global corporate agenda, we now are facing that global corporate agenda, but in addition, we are facing a global militaristic agenda, the expansion of military power. And while I don't have time to expand now, I offer you just two considerations. One, the United States now has more military forces in more parts of the world than it has ever had in the history of the United States. It now has bases in Islamic countries where it was unable to have bases before. It has bases in former Soviet countries, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, countries where it was unable to have military bases before. And so we have, as I say, not merely the corporate global agenda and the extension of corporate power, but we have also this military agenda which says we can go anywhere, we can be based anywhere, and we can zap people anywhere once we call them terrorists. And we don't even have to define how the term is used. And we face that reality in a world where the United States itself has such a record of terrorism in so many parts of the world, either by itself or through its satellites, its agencies, from Mobutu in the Congo to Marcos in the Philippines and all other places in the world. So that instead of, in our time, a reduction in terrorism, we're likely to see an increase in terrorism. People who are bombed, who are angry, who are wounded, who see their children destroyed before their eyes, and who in desperation will react and determine to take revenge. We are not going to stop terrorism by acts of terrorism. We are not going to stop violence by acts of violence, but instead we will generate spirals of ever increasing violence in response to life. And so, as someone who came out of prison with Nelson Mandela in South Africa, where I served time on Robben Island, breaking rocks in the rock-breaking section, someone who had the privilege to be kept in the prison where once long ago in the same cell where Mahatma Gandhi had been jailed in Johannesburg. As someone who has worked with students in this country in a successful campaign to get the money of the United States out of the apartheid economy, and some of you were part of that great struggle, we had 150 universities in this country that voted to divest, to take their money out of apartheid. They took out $3 billion. They helped to bring down the apartheid economy. Now, in our time, we move from the challenge of South African national apartheid. We are moving into an era of global apartheid, of rich getting richer and poor getting poorer. And this is the challenge we face today. We face it at the corporate level, we face it at the military level, and we face it wherever we go and wherever we insist. We want a world with peace for all. We say no to war, no to war, no to war.